Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and I'm back after a summer of guest hosting and much summer frolicking. And it's really, I think, appropriate to have a guest on today who has written a book about general good times.
General good times, yes.
And, just a lot of frolicking, as if you could say so. It is a fun book about a really fun product that has a long history in America. It is moonshine.
Yes.
And the author of it is Jamie Joyce. She's just written Moonshine, A Cultural History of America's Infamous Liquor.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining.
Yeah.
And congrats on the book.
Thank you.
It is, you know, I love these like sort of single subject food histories.
Yeah.
And, you really took the deep dive into this topic. And at first I was thinking, you know, okay, this totally makes sense. It's kind of like, it's emblematic. It goes hand in hand with this sort of DIY food revolution that we've been seeing, canning, all these kind of like really American.
The mason jar business is really flourishing right now between canning and moonshining. I mean, they're blowing up.
Vinegar,
back.
Brewing. Uh-huh. And I was thinking, oh, yeah, I guess, you know, moonshine is like one of those things too, or home distilling. And then I was like, wait a minute. And as you thoughtfully articulate here, and as is shown throughout the stories and the history, moonshine making or any type of spirits making at home is actually illegal.
Totally illegal. Don't do this at home. We are not recommending this. Although we know that many people probably here nearby in Bushwick are doing so. We don't know their names. We won't divulge that.
But, I know some.
I bet you do. Don't say anything.
In fact, I'm drunk right now.
No, I'm perfectly sober, Kathy, so it's okay.
Right. Actually, one thing that was really interesting learning about the history of moonshine, too, is that we are so not as drunk as America was before Prohibition, and
it's a little scary, isn't it, when you think about, there's American drinking culture has changed quite a bit over the centuries. Yeah.
It wasn't just about partying or good times, like I was sort of like kind of associating this book with, and
Originally, you know, I write in the book about colonial America and drinking in colonial America. And in fact, there's Sarah Lohman, who has a blog, 4 Pounds Flour. She talked about, spent a day doing Drink Like a Colonial American Day. And she was messed up by about like 5 o'clock. She started with breakfast and she tried to keep pace on what.
And there was whiskey involved in breakfast, right?
Lots of whiskey involved, hard cider. This was just part of the culture in colonial times. And one of the reasons for that was because whiskey or distilled beverages were considered much safer than water, because water was often polluted or there was a lot of iron in it. So it just wouldn't make you feel good.
So it was a way of purifying water.
Exactly.
And also with some medicinal effects too. There was belief that
alcohol was absolutely used as a medicine. Mm-hmm. I mean, for many years. There's some stories in the book about a distiller that I met with in Dawsonville, Georgia, which is just north of Atlanta, and her grandfather was a very well known moonshine maker in North Georgia. And so she comes from this family heritage of making illegal booze, making illegal moonshine. Which is sort of an oxymoron, illegal moonshine, because that's just what it is. Well, It's redundant, actually. Yeah. It's just okay. Illegal. But she said that they would always put, they'd use it as medicine, and they'd often put little bits of, like, peppermint candy mm-hmm. in it for children.
Right.
It was often, you know, one of the distiller there at this moonshine, at this distillery in Georgia, told me that in the 1980s, he took his little daughter to the doctor, and the doctor said, give her a little spoonful of moonshine. And he said his wife was fit to be tied, but that's what they did, and it totally worked. Cough suppressant.
Right. So mm-hmm. so whiskey, spirits, moonshine had a more everyday, sort of important place in everyday life.
Definitely.
Then now if I see somebody take out like a little flask or like kind of pounding like shots, I'm like, wow, that person is totally out of control.
We need to get them to a program. Right. Right. Back in the day, we would not be thinking that probably. Yeah.
So, okay, so moonshine, as opposed to whiskey, mm-hmm. is by definition illegal?
Well, moonshine, yes, by its definition, mm-hmm. we're talking about a beverage for which taxes have not been paid. So that was sort of the original, that's the origin of that term. A beverage made by the light of the moon. You made it, make it made in secret, in the mm-hmm. backwoods, often made out in the woods by a stream.
And there's some other colorful names for it as well.
There are quite a few.
Hooch.
Hooch.
White lightning.
Hooch is actually a really interesting name because it comes from the Hootchinoo Indians, part of the Tlingit tribe in Alaska.
Oh.
And so that was what they would call the liquor that they would make, which they were taught to make from these whaling ship deserters. They would make it a lot of times with oil cans. They would use that as part of the distillation process. Sometimes large pieces of seaweed. There's a kind of seaweed that has a really long tube.
Oh, wow.
And that was, like the worm in your distillation.
Well, that's fascinating. Yeah, why isn't anyone doing that right now?
Maybe they are.
Okay.
I bet they are in Alaska.
Hint, hint. Moonshiners.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great names. Yes.
So it's illegal, but what else about moonshine that sets it aside? So it's not aged. That's why it's clear.
It's clear.
I understand that.
Raw. Okay. It's not aged. A lot of times, some people have described it to me as bourbon without the barrel, mm-hmm. whiskey without the wood.
So it's a similar process, but you don't kind of take these extra steps after. And this is for reasons of thrift or timeliness. And
it's the same process as whiskey. I mean, it is a whiskey. But you're just not aging it.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 1700s, late 1700s, when farmers were making it in western Pennsylvania, they were making a whiskey. They were making a rye whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't aging it. Over time, the exact dates are a little unclear, but when they were starting to ship that whiskey in these wooden barrels downriver to New Orleans, it would pick up some color and a little mellowing of the flavor from that from the transit process, and then you started to get more of the whiskey that we know today.
So doesn't that mean that moonshine is like just not as good?
Some people might say that. However, there are many people who think that, you know, that unaged clear spirit is really sort of the original expression of whiskey.
True.
So in some ways, it's sort of you know, there's a real educational twist to that because you're learning what whiskey begins as. You get this original flavor, and there's some that are fantastic. There's a really nice variety out there. And there's certainly lots of brands that are putting out an unaged whiskey today. You know, some of the top makers, Jack Daniel's, Jim Beam, doing an unaged whiskey. They might call it a white dog, a white liquor.
Oh.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So what are like the optimal flavor notes of a great moonshine?
You know, it depends on, it can be made with different grains. It can be made with corn. A moonshine could be made with rye. I know some people are making it with, there's a distillery in Nashville that makes it out of quinoa. Corsair Distillery does that. So it really, the grain will also impart a slightly different flavor
amazing.
To it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was reading that a lot of like these old-timey Appalachian moonshiners of yesteryear were using a lot of sugar to help ferment.
Yes, yes.
And then sometimes just purely sugar.
Pure old sugar. They started to call it sugar shine because it was cheaper.
Yeah.
It was readily available. And what started to happen was that there would be the sugar sales. These sugar companies were thinking, my goodness, you know, our sugar sales are through the roof. What is going on? And would and why? Why are all of the sales concentrated in the rural South? And there's this story about this sugar executive who takes a train down to, you know, the southern, I think it was in Virginia. And the story was he got off the train, he looked around, and he saw that there was just, it was in the evening, and there was smoke coming from the hills. And he realized, oh, those are moonshine stills operating in the mountains. And he just got back on that train and went right back because he figured millions of pounds of sugar were not being used to make cake or pie or for preserving, you know, making jellies and jams. It was going into moonshine. So,
it's a good thing.
Yeah, well.
Well, it sounds like from, you know, at least modern day perspectives, sugar, using sugar is sort of like not purist. It was like a lot of people frown upon that, and they're like really proud of using the pure ingredients.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sugar is, well, I mean, I have to say there are some, I've seen some moonshines, legal moonshines, you know, they're whiskeys that are marketed as moonshine, but they have, I've seen a couple that do use sugar. No disparaging what they're doing. I'm sure there's some really good things out there, but that was, became the only thing that was happening, or not the only thing, but it became, something that just made money. You could do it quickly, and
but weren't there challenges associated with using sugar? Like it'll burn too quickly. You might have bitter tastes, and is something about the flavor being upfront too much?
Yeah, that could certainly be problematic. Mm-hmm. But because you could make it so quickly and you could purchase it cheaply, people weren't, I don't think, terribly concerned about that. It was really,
moonshine.
Yeah, it's like, it's cheap liquor. And it was a way to, and honestly, it was a way for people to support families. It wasn't just like, hey, let's have fun and make this booze. It was really a way in the, in, you know, certainly in the Great Depression, and even before that, that people were making liquor to support families in regions of the country where joblessness was a huge problem. So there are great economic reasons for it as well.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about the corn, because that seems to be the main grain that is now used for moonshine. And some of these kind of like new whiskey and moonshine producers, like I saw one that you profiled in Dawsonville,
Georgia.
Yeah, they're very proud of their old timey corn. To quote her, she says the owner, Cheryl Wood, she gets it from a local farmer whose family has supplied North Georgia moonshiners for three generations and malts it herself.
I visited that distillery in Dawsonville and took a tour of the back room, and she's got these trays set out with, you know, they sort of look like, it's almost like a baker's rack almost, with the screen, and all of the corn kernels are sitting on there germinating. I mean, so she's really...
That's an enormous task.
It was, it's like massive,
yellow, white, and burgundy kernels,
They're really, I mean, there are so many of distillers today that really are placing great importance on using local grains. There are certainly economic incentives to doing that also. In Washington State, has the last time I checked, they had the largest number of craft distillers in the country, and there are incentives in Washington State to use Washington State corn. So I believe that might even be required that you use a portion of it. I'm not sure, but...
Well, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And I believe New York State also has similar incentives to using Kings County Distillery. Yeah. They're using, that's here in Brooklyn, they're using a New York State corn as well as a Scottish barley in their moonshine.
Well, it sounds like something that has lived on. And
indeed.
From old-timey yes. corn days.
Yes.
Let's cut to a little musical interlude.
Excellent.
This is Dolly Parton.
Folks say my daddy wasn't much of a man for disobeying the laws of the land. Folks say that my daddy wasn't fit to kill. Oh, and I know it was true what the people said, 'cause we'd all have been better off dead than to live a life of shame and strife, 'cause of daddy's moonshine still. And my mama was always sweet and kind, but she grew old for her time, worrying about the way we had to live. still. Yeah, my daddy put the wrinkles in my mama's face. He drunk his share of all he made. And just one more reason I grew to hate my daddy's moonshine still. Daddy's moonshine still was good for nothing but to break mama's heart and to tear her home apart. Make our lives a living hell. Them old mason jars that daddy made us wash and set them out the sun on our back porch till he got ready to take them up on the hill. And when daddy got a word of the revenue, he made us kids help hide his brew. Made us swear that we never knew about daddy's moonshine still. Yeah, two of my brothers drove across the state line once a week with a load of moonshine and the wounds.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
All right, we're back with author Jamie Joyce about her new book, Moonshine, A Cultural History of America's Infamous Liquor. And that was just Daddy's Moonshine Still by Dolly Parton.
Yes. In writing this book, there are so many songs about moonshine. And for inspiration, I put together this playlist for myself that sometimes I just really needed to rock out a little bit.
Seems to be a lot of songs. Yeah.
There are a lot of songs about moonshine, absolutely. So I put in the book, I've got a playlist of 10 of them, but there's lots more out there. And I'm sure listeners probably have some of their own favorites on here, but I love Daddy's Moonshine Still, Dolly Parton.
I'll include a little list in our write-up on the
Please do.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So every time somebody listens in, they can get inspired and hear another track.
Metallica is kind of rocking one, so yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of these like colorful characters throughout this book, people who are moonshiners or people making moonshine, have you know, just a lot of personality. And is that? And they have funny names too. There's like a guy named Punch. Then there's old Mag Brown.
Oh yeah.
And do you think that this is like due to the somewhat risky and illicit nature? They're sort of kind of like fringe.
Well, they're definitely risk takers. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of my favorite characters in the book, and that's what I wanted to do, is really draw real characters to be able to tell stories about people, not just sort of this dry history of, well, here's what we tell you about moonshine.
Well, it's
moonshine,
not dry at all.
Well, good. But I really wanted to tell stories about people, and one of my absolutely favorite characters, her name is Willie Carter Sharp.
Okay.
And she was what's called a whiskey tripper.
Okay.
And so this is in Franklin County, Virginia, and what her job was she would drive the liquor. Mm. So she would pick up the cases of moonshine. A lot of times it would come in not the mason jars that we imagine today. It would come in these tin cans, sort of like a rectangular shape, so it would fit more easily into, you know, a box. Right. And so she would load up her car. This is in the 30s. She'd load up her car with moonshine and then transport it to different markets, different buyers. And she'd then lead a caravan of other drivers. She was called the pilot car.
Wow.
So she'd do this. But she ended up being part of what was called the Moonshine Conspiracy Trial in 1935. And when she testified in court, she totally dazzled everyone there because she had diamonds in her teeth. So this is like total mouth bling in 1935. And she was a badass. She had done prison time at Alderson Federal Prison, which many years later is where our friend Martha Stewart ended up doing time.
Oh my
gosh. So there's such a great connection here. So how could you not tell that story, Kathy? I mean, it had to be included. So
that is so
that
fun.
Is Willie Carter Sharp.
Willie Carter Sharp, God bless her.
Oh yeah.
She was the designated whiskey driver.
She was.
Or moonshine driver. So I keep saying whiskey.
Well, it is whiskey. Okay. I mean, absolutely. You're not wrong.
So that's good.
It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moonshine.
Yeah. Although it is funny because you mentioned, you know, she was the designated driver. Mm-hmm. We were talking before we started recording about Junior Johnson, a very famous NASCAR driver. And I said, well, did you have a favorite liquor that you... Well, we can talk more about it. But he said, well, I don't drink. I drive fast cars. Fast cars and liquor don't mix. So
Junior Johnson, he's the owner, founder of what is now the biggest, the most popular moonshine distillery.
Junior Johnson is a partner in Piedmont Distillers in mm-hmm. North Carolina, and the product that one of the products that they make is Junior Johnson's Midnight Moon, mm-hmm. and that is based on his family's moonshine recipe.
Right.
And his dad was a moonshine maker. Mm-hmm. And so young Junior dropped out of school in 8th grade at 14 years old. He was the one driving, just like Willie Carter Sharp, you had Junior Johnson in North Carolina delivering all this moonshine. And so in order to be a whiskey tripper, the driver, you need to be able to drive fast, and you need to be really skilled at outrunning revenue agents. And he was a pro.
Of course.
So he never got caught doing that. He did get caught later when he won a big race, the Altamont Schenectady Raceway upstate New York, and he came back one night, and very early in the morning his father asked him to fire up the stills. Mm-hmm. And so young Junior, probably all of 22 at that point, something like that, goes out, fires up the stills in the morning, and finds that he's surrounded by what he told me it was 18 revenue agents. Mm-hmm. And that was it for him. And he ended up getting sent to Chillicothe, Ohio, to prison, federal prison, for did 11 months. Got out, went right back into racing and moonshining.
And he became a big-time NASCAR driver.
He's in the NASCAR Hall of Fame, inaugural class of inductees. And now
the maker of, the best-selling moonshine.
Exactly.
In the country.
So that is a success story right there.
So funny. And what about, the nouveau, next-generation mm-hmm. moonshiners? You mentioned Kings County Distillery.
Absolutely.
And that was the first distillery in Brooklyn since Prohibition.
You bet, yeah. Those guys are so great. They were really helpful in writing this book also, so generous with their time and talking to me about what they were doing and their history, how they got started. So I think that, here are some people who Colin Spolman from Kings County, mm-hmm. and David Haskell started out by making moonshine in their apartment.
Right.
And this became something that, hey, man, maybe we should start a business out of this. And I just love their story because Colin's a guy from Kentucky, comes up to Brooklyn and brings this, Kentucky tradition with him here up north, and then ends up opening this distillery that's located in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And he tells terrific stories, and I've got some of these stories in the book too, about how that whole area around the Brooklyn Navy Yard was home to many, many illicit distillers
in the
1800s.
Right. The old Irish town neighborhood that had the ill-fated sort of rebellion against tax collectors trying to tax their moonshine and whiskey and booze.
And I think it's so interesting because when most people think about moonshine, you think about the South. And in fact, it was going on in Brooklyn, in New York City, in Boston. There were moonshiners. There were moonshiners during Prohibition in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. in Washington State. I mean, there were people all over.
All over.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, it was exciting. It's definitely coming back. Who'd have thought? I mean, now we have distilleries throughout Brooklyn making moonshine, too.
Absolutely.
I think Van Brunt Stillhouse.
Yep, Van Brunt Stillhouse
has one.
Yep, absolutely.
I think it's White something. White Light?
They just call it... Oh, gosh. I shouldn't say for sure because it's not coming instantly to mind.
That's okay.
But so many places across the country are putting out either a moonshine or a white dog, depending on kind of who they want to appeal to and what tradition, But they're all mm-hmm. in that tradition, for sure.
And I think, it's great because they must have overcome so many hurdles with, the perception of this sort of rough, unrefined sort of whiskey.
Well, I'm glad you say that, though, because you can choose. I mean, there's not a government designation for moonshine. You don't. There's no classification for that. No. And in fact, I think a lot of distillers who choose to call it moonshine, you're drawing upon that rich history. You use that name because of the things that it conjures, or the things that you think about of illegality and illicit distilling at night. So it sort of has
and
that sex
songs,
appeal to it. Yeah.
The music.
Exactly.
The legacy. And yep. Tell me, what have you seen any other instances of the music legacy of moonshine coming back?
Well, yes, like, actually. The funny thing is... I tell people this a lot, that I have, as I was writing the book, I had a Google alert for anything, any references to moonshine or whiskey that would come up. So I'd get alerts, and I still have it. I just, you know, as I'm talking about the book, I still keep this up and running. But the thing that comes up constantly, I mean, I can always count on at least once a day, I get a Google alert for moonshine, and it's Brad Paisley, Moonshine in the Trunk. He's got a new album out, so... Which I'll admit I haven't listened to yet.
Okay.
But I should.
Maybe we could also put that on our playlist.
I think we should.
Sequel.
Yeah.
It is an evocative name, and you're right. It definitely sums up this rich history that we have with distilling.
Yes.
So thank you so much for writing it.
My
and
pleasure.
To educating us about moonshine, and hopefully next time we meet, we'll get to drink some.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me. This was
thanks
really
so
fun.
Thanks so much. And thanks everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.